Welcome to Comics.
Episode 239. This week, we talk about Batgirl. Batgirl Rising. Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the casting. December 18th.
Oh, shit.
Really?
So, I guess you guys have been, like, living under a rock or something, but the hype train is rolling.
Wait, mm-hmm. What's Star Wars?
It's this movie about these guys, it's these stars and they fight in a war.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, basically. There's, like, space wizards and, white guys. Well, I mean... They're guys in white armor. They might okay. not. They actually, that. Anyways, it's not about race, but they're Disney owns this property now, and so there's a lot of cool products coming out. One of the things they released recently is a number of, I guess they're like young adult novels.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen three so far. There's one about Luke, one about Leia, and one about Han and Chewie.
Yeah.
And so I saw them when I was at Costco recently, and I picked up the one with Han and Chewie because it's written by Greg Rucka.
Oh.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
And I just finished reading it before we started recording. It's about 180 pages or so. It's like a young adult book. It was pretty good. It's got some pictures in it every once in a while. And what's interesting is... when I got to the end, there's like a little bit about the author thing, and then there's an about the artist, and it's Phil Noto, who did the comic that we're talking about tonight.
Sick.
So they're all black and white drawings of like, you know, Han and Chewie, and kind of little glimpses of what's going on in the story. And it was pretty cool. I thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, that's what we're talking about. Some Phil, I think you... Yeah. The Phil Noto covers is what, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I saw those covers for those novels, they did look really familiar. And they look cool. And I was like, man, why aren't those prints? I would pick up a couple of those as prints. Phil Noto's amazeballs.
Well, it's cool, too. So all the pictures, well, maybe not all of them, but they're all, like, many of, I think maybe all of them, actually. The pictures that are in the interspersed between the chapters and stuff are all too, like, double page, like two-page spreads.
Oh, nice.
And they're all in grayscale, except for there's, like, red highlights. So there's one shot of Han and Chewie and this other character, rebel character from the story, in a shootout with bounty hunters. And it's all grayscale, except for the blaster fire is red. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, and it was for...
A younger
audience, so it was a very fast read, but it wasn't bad, you know. It was written well and it was entertaining, and so they're all they all have a heading that says "Journey to Star Wars: The Force Awakens." So this one kind of
they're all supposed to be like the lead in the filling in the time in between.
Yeah, and so it says hidden within the story are clues about the highly anticipated new film. Star Wars The Force Awakens, so I don't know what the clues are. This story is actually set between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, though. So maybe a character that they talk about in here is going to appear later is going to be in Force Unleashed, because there's like Imperial characters that are new to this story. So.
Hmm. Alright.
But it was cool. It was a good read. It was, it was one of those things. I saw it at Costco, and It was like, it's the hardback. It looks like the cover price is $13, but I think it was like $8 because it was Costco.
Yeah. It's always easier to find it less than the cover price.
And so I picked up this, the Han Solo and Chewie one, specifically because it was written by Greg Rucka. But somebody had actually recommended the Luke Skywalker one to me previously, too. It's worth the read if you're interested in reading Star Wars novels. And this one's, like I said, a very quick read. It was entertaining. I'm interested in reading the other two, so I probably will pick them up at some point.
All right. Let us know how they are.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know when I will actually get around to buying them, but I approve of the Han Solo and Chewie one is actually called Smuggler's Run, and it's pretty good.
All right. So, the Super Welcome to Sugoi Comics Mega Gundam Building Throwdown leaderboard stands today. The Purple Sengoku Astra is at 15, the Weather Denial is at 14, the Banshee Norn and the Zaku Amazing are both tied at 12, and the Sengoku Christmas Astra 1 is at 5. So, a week after you're hearing this, listeners, is when we will close the voting. Close it. Seriously, go get your friends involved, share the post with people. Every vote will count. And the winner gets a free Gunpla kit from me. Actually, from you guys. This Gunpla kit's gonna be paid for partially with your Patreon, support. We have a little bit left over this year. We got plenty, to cover our bandwidth, and we have some change left over, about a month's worth. So I'm gonna use that to buy this Gunpla kit. So thank you, patrons on Patreon, for letting us run this competition and have a real prize and not some shit I pulled out of my butt. So, I appreciate that. I'm sure the winner will appreciate that. Thank you for being awesome patrons. You covered the bandwidth for the show and a little bit then some, which is so great for us. But yeah, go vote. See what you got going on, because every vote will count, really. Even the ones that are 12 could totally come back and tie it up or win. And you know, if we get a tie, I'll kick in some out of my own wallet. Don't worry. I'm not going to put it all on you patrons. And we'll buy kits for everybody that ties for winner. We'll see what happens with that. All right. You guys ready for this week's comic?
Yeah.
Yep.
This week's comic.
All right. This week we read Batgirl Rising, which collected the first 7 issues of Volume 3, which came out in 2009, written by Brian Q. Miller with pencil from Lee Gabbert, ink from Trevor Scott, and color from Guy Major, which is a great name. It might be Guy Major, but I like Guy Major. It sounds hardcore. First things first, the backstory on this comic involves Dick Grayson as Batman, and every single time I read the word Dick, I giggle. Which
my favorite line from the comic was, I think it was a thought bubble of Stephanie Brown where she says, "God help Dick when Damian hits puberty."
Yeah.
Because that's... I mean, I know that it wasn't meant to be like that, but man, it's
but
such...
But still.
It should, yeah. And this is the thing. It shouldn't even make me giggle so much, because I have an uncle named Dick. I have all of my uncles are our names, Robert, Richard, Rudolph, whatever, and the Richard goes by Dick. So I have an Uncle Dick. I shouldn't... I've had an Uncle Dick since I was born. I shouldn't giggle so much at the name Dick.
No, it's just not possible.
It's yeah. So, listeners, if you are annoyed by immaturity, just stop listening now, because every time we mention Dick, somebody's going to giggle. I'm sure of it.
Well, when I read that line that I mentioned, I thought, oh man, when Damian hits puberty, he's coming for Dick.
There's another Dick line in here, too, that I forgot about. There's some that are pretty good.
It makes me wonder if they're accidental or...
I'm sure it's like part and part. There's a little bit of it that's accidental, but a little bit of Dick snuck in there.
Yeah, sneaky, tricky Dick.
That tricky Dick. So, okay, the backstory for this one. Last one, we had the backstory about No Man's Land and Cassandra coming in. So the backstory for this one, Bruce Wayne is dead. He was shot at the end of shot at the beginning of Final Crisis. He's dead, so Dick Grayson is filled in to become Batman. And Stephanie Brown, who was Robin, becomes Batgirl. Stephanie Brown started out as the daughter of a thug mobster, And she took on the Visage of...
Isn't she the daughter of Sportsmaster or something like that?
Was that what it was?
She is the daughter of a villain.
I think it's Sportsmaster. I have to look this up.
Yeah. Anyway, so she becomes Spoiler to fight her father because she believes what her father's doing is wrong. And as Spoiler, she runs in with the Bat Crowd, kind of befriends and works, but doesn't work with Oracle. Doesn't know who Oracle is at that point, I don't think. And then the Robin at that point? Whoever the Robin is decides to stop being Robin or move on from Robin. So she becomes Robin for a short period of time, at which point she... meets and befriends Cass and trains with Cass while she is Robin. And then in this comic, Cass gives up the cowl we see, and Stephanie Brown takes over as Batgirl. Which makes sense, because Tim came back to be Robin, so you gotta have one of everything. And I have to say... Oh, go.
Oh, I was going to say, it's actually Clue Master, not Sports Master.
Ah! So it's a straight-up villain.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it super villain? Does he have any powers?
Well, they call him supervillain. He's a failed game show host who became a criminal who left clues to his crimes, though unlike the Riddlers, they were not riddles.
Nature host?
Game show host. Did I say host?
I thought we were talking, like, Discovery Channel, like...
Sorry, no, he's a game show host.
Like the Bear Grylls, or Bear Grylls, or whatever his name is, yeah.
He's the evil Pat Sajak.
Yeah, this is his daughter. I think after these three, I think this is my favorite Batgirl. I think.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's just her, though, because I like everybody's portrayal in this comic more than in the others. I feel like the Bruce Wayne that you get as Batman in year one was like the classic Bruce Wayne, the classic Batman. But I've always liked Dick more than Bruce. There it is. I think Batman is better as Dick.
You mean Dick is better as Batman?
Yeah, I think Dick is a better Batman. Just because he can be the same serious. He's almost as good as a detective. He's functionally as good of a martial artist in most instances, and he's more fun to read. Batman's such an old, stoic character. I feel like most of the time when I'm reading Bruce Wayne, I'm reading a stock character. Whatever dynamicism used to be there, I know that character through and through.
Well, I think it's just because Bruce is so established that he has become, like, the basis for comparison for any similar character. So he is the stock character.
Yeah. And I always thought it was a really interesting move to kill him and bring in Dick Grayson as Batman, because he's a very compelling Batman in that he can play with Oracle and, not play with Oracle. That was before. He can banter with Oracle and he has a different relationship with Damian that makes him more interesting. I don't know. I feel like the supporting cast in this is more fun than the supporting cast in the previous two that we've read. Even Damian. Damian's a little twerp, but he's fun to read.
Yeah, so you're saying Stephanie's your favorite Batgirl, or this comic about Batgirl is your favorite?
I think this comic is my favorite of the three that we've read.
Here's
the thing. I don't think that it is as good as year one. I will rate it lower, but I enjoyed reading it more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I found this comic... See, I actually found this comic kind of boring until Damian and Dick became more prominent in the comic. I don't know. I just didn't find it that interesting. It's hard to describe. I was like, okay. I was kind of just reading it, and it just felt kind of so-so until there was more of a supporting cast. And... you know, that sometimes is the strength of a comic is in the supporting cast, the people that surround the character. I think that's true for even some of the big names like Superman. I mean, part of the reason why Superman has been such a lasting character is because of characters like Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen, and even Perry White, you know, these people that are not Superman, but really they create the world that Superman lives in. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, Stephanie as Batgirl in a vacuum was not that interesting to me. Or even Stephanie teamed up with
Oracle.
Oracle was I'm not saying it's bad. I just didn't find it to be like super interesting. But then when she started interacting with Damian and Batman Dick, yeah, it became a lot more interesting to me. So
really, I actually kind of felt the opposite. Like, well, it's not that it was less interesting, but I enjoyed it more before Batman and Damian came onto the scene. I think in part that's because I find Damian like incredibly insufferable. But I actually really enjoyed the parts where she was like interacting with Barbara and convincing Barbara that she was kind of, you know, worthy of Oracle's support. And then when I think what it is too is like Batman and Robin had to be they were pitted against like really lame villains.
Mm-hmm.
And that made it less exciting because it felt really obvious that like Roulette couldn't possibly win, like in no way. So
because it was Dr. Phosphorus, Roxy the Rocketeer, or Rocket Roxy, or whatever it is, and what was the multiple man's name?
Riot.
That's right. Yeah, the only one I'd heard of before was Dr. Phosphorus, but usually in about this kind of like C level villain. Is where you hear about Dr. Phosphorus. Yeah, it kind of, especially with this many Bat people in a book, it's kind of like, okay, I know Bruce is gone, but they can handle this. This isn't impossible.
Well, like, I think they did take care of those villains pretty handily. I mean, they wrapped them up in like one issue. But you don't want to put them up against like Joker, right? I think that's
That's a Volume 3 story.
Yeah.
As having Stephanie fight Barbara's demons. That's a story you get later on.
Well, I mean, look what happened to Jason Todd when he went up against the Joker.
Yeah, but that was a whole stupid thing that DC did. They
I know the 900 number and stuff.
Yeah, that didn't have that much to do with character and Jason Todd and Joker. That was a promotional thing.
Right.
Yeah, but there's, like, in-between villains.
Yeah, like, somebody that's laughable but still has pulled off major crimes, like, Calendar Man.
Yeah, Calendar Man.
I mean, Calendar Man is funny, but, you know, Calendar Man could get away with some murders and be tough to catch. You don't know. I think part of it was these guys were just in your face. But then, so the bigger scheme was with the family and everything. I think that was that was more of the test, is less defeating the villains and more figuring out what was going on.
Yeah.
The detective work is the worrying part, not so much the fighting. I mean, we're shown the fighting because that's supposed to be like a, hey, cool, comic books, fighting, action, action, action. But, I mean, if you read a Bat comic, you're looking for at least a little bit of detective work, or at least you ought to be. So her putting those pieces together was what made it worth it. I compare this also to last week, and that last week there was really one character. Last week there was Cassandra and everybody else in the book. And that really made the comic flounder a lot when Cassandra wasn't on the page, or when Cassandra was quiet, or those moments when it was supposed to be like David Kane and Batman, and it's like, oh, well, yeah, Batman's a fucking idiot in that. This, I feel like, at least most of the storylines for me were compelling. I wasn't too bored. It did take a little bit to get rolling, I will say that, with Cassandra coming in and then having to do her exit. What I did like about what I really appreciated about the transition was when Stephanie was wearing Cassandra's costume, and issue to issue, the costume was getting more fucked up, and she would mention that she doesn't know how to sew, and like where a bullet grazed her in issue one, if you're paying attention, in issue three, that tear is still there on that part of the leg.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that attention to continuity and detail. That's something that the writer missed and made a point out of, and that the artist had to make a point out of. And it ties into the character in the story too, with her, like, with Oracle putting it in as Cassandra's costume. Like, when she drops that low blow. It's important because then it's not only is this not your costume, but look at what's happening to it while you wear it. All right.
Nicely played.
What did you guys think about Stephanie as a character, as a Batgirl?
I like Stephanie. I liked her as Spoiler. I think she was in... I have to think back. I think she made an appearance as Spoiler in the, in Nightfall. The Nightfall storyline, you know, whatchamacallit, Bane breaks Batman. And she's kind of teamed up, because Tim Drake is Robin at that time. And they kind of, she kind of helps out and makes some cameos in there in her original, like her old Spoiler costume, which I also thought was pretty cool. And so I do like her as a character. But like I said, it's interesting to see. I love that the Robin, mantle is not necessarily limited to little boys.
Yeah.
And this iteration of Robin, or this version of Robin, I think is much better than, well, what's her name? Carrie. I forget what her last name is. Carrie from Dark Knight Returns, was good as Robin too.
Carrie Kelly.
Kelly. But whenever I think back about Carrie Kelly, I can't separate her from her tenure as Catwoman in Dark Knight. Was it Dark Knight Strikes?
Oh, again? Yeah. The Return. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
God, that was horrible.
That book was so bad.
Yeah. So I think Stephanie is definitely one of my favorite Robins, and I really like her Batgirl costume.
Yeah,
the one
me
that
too.
Barbara gives her. I just didn't love this comic at first. But I do like Stephanie as a character. I think she's interesting. I think it's cool that we get to see her balance her life with her mom and going to college and being Batgirl, and we see the sacrifices, the personal sacrifices she makes to do what she wants to do as a masked vigilante, right? I mean, she has trouble getting her homework done.
Yeah.
But to a certain degree,
she has trouble getting an hour of sleep.
Yeah. I kind of got the notion that she decided to take computer science classes just because Barbara was the teacher.
Oh, yeah. I think she definitely did.
Yeah. She's like trying to get in with her. Because at that point, you know, Barbara is like, fuck off. So...
She's still in her I'm angry mode.
Yeah.
What about you, Jen?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I'm just going to conclude that, yes, I do, in fact, like her as a character.
Okay. Jen, what do you about think about Stephanie?
I think she's likable as a character. I, as I said, like, really appreciate her interactions with Oracle. She seems way more normal than the previous yeah. Batgirls, right? I mean, Barbara's
definitely more normal than Cassandra. Just look at the costume difference.
Yeah. I mean, Cassandra is basically just like young girl Batman.
Yeah.
She's going to grow up like equally fucked up. But at the same time, like, it's hard here to get a grasp of Stephanie's motivation for being Batgirl. I feel
the
like
reason.
Compared to... Yeah, like the reason compared to the other two we read, because it seems like it was just really like Barbara had like this sense of justice, and then Cassandra's just incredibly well suited for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like you kind of get the sense like Stephanie keeps promising not to do this, and then she's like, well, I'm going to go do it anyway, but she doesn't say why. So like, I mean, and I don't know if it needs to be verbalized, per se, but at the same time, it's kind of nice to, like, understand her motives for repeatedly lying and putting herself in danger. I also appreciate that she, like, basically faced no bad consequences for doing that, because it always worked out for her, and that happens sometimes, right? It's like, I hate the moral where it's like the character lies to their mom and then everything goes downhill from there.
Yeah.
So
I really think with her, the reason is that she's an addict. She's addicted to being a crime fighter, which sounds kind of silly. But, I mean, you think about people who get addicted to runner's high and that sort of stuff. But also for Stephanie, I think it's not just lifestyle, but friends. She's friends with Cassandra. She's friends with Dick. And she's friends with Oracle, even though they have a tiff. And, I mean, you see her try to make friends at a party. And it's not what she wants at all. And I think that's why she can bring the... That's why I agree, David. I really love the costume because it's a very stark change from Cassandra, who is dark and closed off. And, like, aside from not letting the hair out, like, closes the eyes and closes the mouth and closes everything, just completely closed and covered. And Stephanie, like, brings in some purple color accents, brings in a place in the back of the cowl for her hair to come out. Like, she's much more willing to show her personality and show that she's having fun with it. I don't know what that means when she does fight somebody serious, how she's going to handle that. But I do like the idea of her being an addict and being addicted to this.
I think it's reminiscent of Barbara at the beginning of her superhero career.
Yeah, a little bit.
She became a superhero became a vigilante because she wanted to be a hero, you know?
Yeah, and in that one we were talking about how Barbara seems to bring a lightness to the team when it was just Dick and Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And now it feels like Oracle has gotten hardened by Gotham the same way that they were, and now we need somebody to lighten the team other than Damian. I don't know if Damian lightens the team. Damian is something to laugh at as a reader, but not necessarily as part of the world.
Well, it's kind of fun to watch Damian grow because he has like no he has a very skewed view of the world, right?
Oh, yeah.
It really comes out in the way he interacts with people, and you know, so that's I think that's part of the fun of Damian. But he's still a kid, and he has, even though he's a trained assassin, he still has kid sensibilities a little mm-hmm. bit. And so it's kind of fun. And I think what's cool about Damian is you not so much in this comic, but in Damian as a whole in Batman comics, is that you get to see him kind of grow up in reverse. Like Bruce and Dick, to a certain degree, both seem to make it a point to let Damian have a childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's super important for both of them. Because I think for Bruce, like, Bruce sees it as that he didn't get to have a childhood because his parents were killed. And now that he is a father, he needs to make sure that his son gets that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dick kind of just inherits that. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, here nor there, that's fine.
He's like...
They're family.
Dick's basically his little brother, right?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, his older brother.
Yeah, Damian is basically Dick's little brother.
And I think that's true
Dick about... is definitely the big brother.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry. This is the problem. Then I try too hard.
Yeah, so, I think... You know, I think overall the cast is really good.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed this one more because as I read it, I found myself like half grinning and smiling more as I was reading it. Stephanie is she's more fun to read. This comic just had a much more fun vibe to it.
Definitely, I'd agree with that.
Which I mean, there are times when you need a fun comic on the lineup.
Yeah. I think going back to the villains, I think the reason why we get some C and like lower grade level villains is because this really isn't about, this comic is not about the villains. It's about the Bat family. Yeah. And if you put bad guys in with too big of a name recognition, it can overshadow the characters. And part of this comic is to show off Stephanie, right? And if you put somebody even like the Riddler or I'm trying to think of like a B-list Batman villain. You know, people, you know, or like Mr. Zazz, right? Even he has name recognition that could overshadow Stephanie a little bit because he has a long history with Batman. And so I think that the choice of villains was a good one. I mean, in the first four or five issues, they're like, she's fighting like nameless thugs for the most part. Well, I mean, and Scarecrow a little bit, but it's not, Scarecrow is not in it. He wasn't.
He's not a fighter. Once you get the scheme.
Yeah.
He's easy to take down. It's like a Riddler. They're dangerous so long as you don't have them figured out. And then as soon as you do and you know where to go, you just punch them and you've won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Well, what did you guys think of the art in this one?
Loved it.
I liked it. It was very clean and, you know, it conveyed the action really well. It moved the story along. It didn't feel like anything that was really like chaff, I guess is a good word. I thought it was good.
Yeah. There was a full page spread that I really liked, and it's where Batman and Robin first come in, and then like Stephanie's in the foreground, and she's muttering something like kind of asinine to herself about it. Like, the art there was so good. Just, like, you know, they're, like, bursting in traditional comic style, and here's this girl, like, all broody in the foreground, just saying something bitchy, and it was excellent.
Yeah.
It, like, conveyed her grumpiness about the whole situation so well.
Yeah, I think this art kills it. I mean, it might also be after last week, when none of us really liked the art, and this just kind of being okay, just makes it seem leaps and bounds better. But I really did enjoy this. I don't think there was anything. The action moved really, really well. The scene when they're fighting those three supervillains that Roulette sent after them. Man, that, I gotta tell you, when you talk about difficulty of an action scene, that's something that would have been real easy to get jumbled up. Because you had Riot, who is as many people as you want. Roxy Rocket, who basically interacts and fights in a 3D kind of way, so it's not like a flat plane that you're drawing. And then Dr. Phosphorus, which you can, I don't know, he's the easier one to draw. But those are the villains. But then on the flip side, you have three heroes that they're fighting too. So you've got like 10-on-3. It's very difficult to depict that level of acting and action and movement between the characters in a single scene and have it come off as cleanly as this did. There was never a time when I was like, wait, what just happened there? I didn't cross the gutter here. Frame to frame, I'm missing something. What went on there? Considering that there's action like that in this, it's quite a testament.
So I was looking back at flipping through the pages a little bit, the digital pages. I read it on Comixology.
Yeah.
My favorite scene is actually in issue 7, or not scene, but like panel, and it's where the three of them confront Roulette, and it has you see Roulette's hand with a gun, but then the focus of the page is Stephanie and Damian with Batman looming behind them, and it's just a really cool one page splash page, and I think it captures all three characters, the three heroes really well, because Damian and Stephanie are both kind of sassier characters.
Yes, that's a great way to put it.
Dick is very, he's definitely capturing the Batman spirit, because you just
look
see
tough.
You see his silhouette and his, you know, the eyes and his, you barely see his chin a little bit, but the Batman logo is front and center, so.
Hell,
it was just
yeah.
A really good page that I think captures the Bat family dynamic really well. I think you could replace these characters with, you know, it could be Bruce, Barbara, and Dick as Robin in that picture instead. And I think that even though these are very different people filling the role, they all capture the spirit of the character in their own way.
See, you know, I think picking out a scene like that and thinking about this comic is why I like Dick more as a Batman and why I like Stephanie more as a Batgirl. Because, you know, you get those moments when Batman is being Batman, and that's great. And and Batman can be played by different people, and Dick coming in really shows you that. But it's contrasted with those scenes when Dick and Barbara are bantering, and Dick turns and gives a witty comeback and a smile at Barbara. And that's not something Bruce would do, because Bruce is the facade and Batman's the reality, and Dick is more balanced. And it makes, when Dick is Batman and is a badass, it puts that in contrast with when he's chummy and witty and funny. And that contrast makes both of the sides better, I think. And I think the same works. I think that's why I like Stephanie better. There's no brooding like Cassandra. There's not even the reason. She just enjoys it, and she's good at it, and she can do it, and she wants to. And, you know, there might be a little problem with her being addicted to it later on. That might be a story thing that comes up. And we might see more of a reason. I mean, that's the other thing, is the reason why she started was two generations of her character ago, when she was spoiler before she came Robin and way before she became Batgirl. Her reason is done. She's completed what she wanted to do. Her father's put away. Great, good job. But now she just enjoyed it so much and she's addicted to it. But like, the her being being jovial and having fun with it contrasts the times when she's serious and actually figures things out and takes it seriously with Oracle. I think you say that it's it could be anybody there, but I think it has to be these people. That's what makes this comic good for me.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. You guys want to rate this?
Sure.
Jen, how about you go first?
I'm going to give this a 3. Something about it just didn't stick with me. And I feel like for lighthearted Batgirl, I preferred Barbara Gordon. I think it just was a bit slow going. And then the end felt very anticlimactic to me. I did love the art. So, you know, that puts it above average for me. But the story, I don't know. And I think that's part of why I just didn't have much to say this week. I couldn't, like, I don't dislike it. But at the same time, I didn't feel, like, a strong, like of it either. So I feel pretty neutral about this one. But yeah, 3.
Okay. So who's your favorite Batgirl?
Barbara.
All right. David, what do you got?
You know, I'm also gonna give this a 3. Like I said, I didn't love the comic at first, but I thought it picked up when the supporting cast made more of a impact. So I think it definitely got better as it went along. So I think that's a point in its favor, even though I'm only giving it a 3. That's still better than average. I do think this was in general, a good comic and definitely worth checking out if you, like Batgirl and just want to know more about the different Batgirls. So, a 3.
All right. Who's your favorite Batgirl?
It's gotta be Cassandra.
She's pretty balling out of control when it comes to the fighting.
You know, she is, but I think that what we read wasn't the best of Cassandra. Yeah. I think to get the best Cassandra, you gotta read No Man's Land.
Yeah, and it's tough too, because Barbara Gordon has so many years of Batgirl under her belt. And if you're going to do a year one, if you're going to get an all-star writing and art team together, I mean, you're going to do Barbara if you can do a standalone story about Batgirl. She's their Batgirl when it comes to DC. She's the, how do they phrase it? The, like, perennial character. And then Cassandra, it's the pilot problem, right? Like, when you watch a TV show, the pilot is always the worst episode, or is usually the worst episode. Very often is. I know you, like, Lost is one of the ones that bucks the trend. But usually the pilot's tough, and it kind of grows from there as it gets steam going. So that might be what happened there. I really like this one, though. I like this a lot because I feel like this vibe with Stephanie and Dick Grayson and Damian really helps shrug off the staleness of this character and this family. I feel like every time I read a Bat Family book, I know what I'm getting in for. It always feels the same. It feels like such a stale part of the DC universe. And this team did a really good job of just throwing that aside. And I think Stephanie might not be as compelling of a primary character as Cassandra. She couldn't carry the book all on her own, but she doesn't have to. And she doesn't feel like she has to, and I appreciate that. So I'm going to give this a 4. I really liked it, and I think it reinvigorates my interest in Bat Family stuff. Whereas before I was like, yeah, okay, ho-hum, whatever, another bat, whatever. I'm going to give it a 4. And I'm going to say Stephanie's my favorite Batgirl too. Barbara's Barbara, but I think I like Barbara better as Oracle than I do as Batgirl. And Cassandra's awesome and badass and everything, but I like the more fun stuff. I like Stephanie more. I don't think she would win in a fight. That's definitely Cassandra every time. But I think Stephanie's my favorite. All right, y'all ready for Fight Night?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, this week's Fight Night, just like every week, is brought to you by Patreon. Become a Patreon today. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. Support the show. With your donations, we can do all kinds of cool stuff, like run a contest and have a prize. Yay! Thank you, everybody. Awesome. This week's topic is worst superhero roommate. Either as a hero or in their secret identity, you can go either way, but worst superhero roommate. David, you've got 3 wins coming into this week. How about you go first?
Fight Night, round 1.
All right, so I picked Batman, specifically Bruce Wayne, as Batman, so not Bruce, but Batman. I think he would be a terrible roommate because, first of all, he'd be grumpy and broody all the time. He'd keep weird hours, so if you're trying to sleep, he might come going in and out of the house through windows and stuff. If you decided to room with Batman, you would actually be getting 2 roommates because you would have an old British man living with you, too. Although that might be a plus because he would be like bringing you tea and little sandwiches and stuff. But, and, you know, when he's not being Batman as Bruce, he would be, you know, flaunting his money, and that might not be such a, you know, he might make you feel bad. Like, look at this rich guy. Why has he got to be your roommate? So, you know, he would be moody.
Get your own digs, Batman.
Yeah, you could afford it, right? You don't got to live with me. But, yeah, he would be moody. There would be an old British man, probably some old man smell going on. No disrespect to Alfred, but he's an old guy. So I don't think it would be a great situation. And, you know, if he ever didn't pay the bills, I think that would be grounds to, like, kick him out because you know he could pay the bills.
Yeah. He's just being a dick in that case. Yeah.
You'd just be, well, he'd be a Bruce, not a dick. I think a dick would be a better roommate than Bruce.
Definitely did.
Anyways, okay, good. That's my thing.
Round 2.
All right, I'm going to go next. I have 2.5 points. Don't ask how I got the half. I'm going to go with Ben Grimm. Because Ben Grimm, okay, you're thinking about the functional stuff, right? He's big. He's made of rock. He probably brings dirt all over the house. He can't sit on your furniture because he'll break it. He'll try and cook something and accidentally dent the stove. All that stuff, yes, those are things that make him a bad roommate. But what really makes him a bad roommate is Ben Grimm as a human being. Aside from being super fucking emo all the time and just having to roll your eyes, yes, Ben, I know you can't make love to a woman, nah, 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 nah. And whatever else he's complaining about, yes, I know your skin isn't really skin, it's made of rock, I can tell, nah, it's so bad. He also has a huge temper problem. So when he's not crying, he's running through the wall and breaking shit. It's the most emotional up and down roommate you could possibly have. He would just be a terrible, terrible person to try and hang out with or communicate. He's the worst part of every Fantastic Four comic, and he would be the worst roommate ever.
Round 3.
Jen, you got 3 points, tied with David for the lead. You're up.
Okay. I think the worst roommate would be Mogo, because you have like 2 options, right? One is you live on Mogo, but that's living on your roommate, which is awkward, especially if you're like, what if you want to hook up with someone? Right? You don't want to be like hooking up with someone on top of your roommate. That's hella creepy. Your other option is you share an actual house with Mogo, but if he got into your house, he'd just kill you and everyone else on the planet because he's huge. So you're basically fucked.
Oh Okay, we gotta go. David, who's your vote for?
I'm gonna have to go with Jen, just because of the having sex on your roommate line. So, yeah. Point for Jen.
Yeah, I'm also giving my point to Jen.
My logic was infallible.
Yes, because I was thinking, like, oh, I don't really want to plow my date into my roommate, like, awkwardly. Like, it's not... I don't want to have sex on top of a roommate. And, I mean, okay, let me restate. That could be a good thing if your roommate is sexually attractive, but I don't get turned on by planets. So, no.
Well, think about it. You know how there's, like, always, and sometimes in, like, teen or college movies, there's a scene where one roommate's trying to sleep and they're, like, in a dorm room and the other one stumbles in all drunk with their date and they start going at it and the roommate's all awkward and stuff. That would happen every time, no matter what. Like, if you're drunk, sober, whatever, Mogo is always watching you.
Plus, Mogo is kind of like the Green Lantern Corps therapist. When people have problems or need a vacation, they go to Mogo. And if you were just living with Mogo on Mogo, that would be the fucking worst.
Just, and think about it. If
people
only
come to you when they have problems.
If you're just rooming with Mogo... and you're not a Green Lantern, there's cops coming over all the time. Like, if you're trying to smoke your space weed or something, and these narcs are coming around all the
just
time,
to
what
use
are you
going
to do?
Sticks.
Yeah. Exactly. Glitter Stim Spice.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Whatever.
Winner. Jen.
Jen wins the week. She's got four. She's in the lead. We were going to end Fight Night this week, but I feel like milking this whole Mogo thing a couple more weeks since it's only 2 weeks old. All right, so for the next 2 weeks, we're going to tackle Alex and Ada. It's a 15-issue series about a guy who gives his robot an AI, and he falls in love with it. Should be really interesting. We don't talk about robotics and sci-fi that much, at least not as much as I would like to on this show. I think it's a really interesting topic that I really like chatting about. So next week, we're going to read the first 7 issues of Alex and Ada, and then the week after that, we're going to read issues 8 through 15. It's printed by Image, written by Jonathan Luna and Sarah Vaughn. Go check it out. I think a while ago, it was on a Humble Bundle. You can find it usually on sale through digital distribution pretty frequently. Alex and Ada, that's next week. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.